You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 6 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein Werf. We'll be back with a live show next week. On today's show, Nick Kuntz on that Capitec update, Anthony Clark on local education stocks, including his preferred, and Prabhashini Mudli, MD at Old Mutual Corporate, on infrastructure being included in Reg 28 assets. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb, how to spot an investment scam, and from Business Day, S&P questions how SA will deliver on spending cuts. Morning markets, the US was closed on Friday for Independence Day. Asia is green, Sydney up 0.2%, Turkey are up 1.4%. Commodities are starting the week slightly red, the rand pretty much unchanged, 16.98, and the top 40 is calling for an open 1% green.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Nick Kuntz from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning, appreciate your time. Capitec trading update, 3:30 Friday afternoon. Loss of $404 million for the quarter ending May 2020. Credit impairment 145% higher than expected. HEPS at least 70% lower. It's a horror update. I suppose the question is it worse than expected or kind of, I suppose, what we thought considering we're in the middle of a pandemic?
Simon, morning. Yeah, I mean, Capitec, there's very little way to put a silver lining on those results, really. I mean, and I guess I've had this conversation with our analysts as well when that news broke. Is anyone quite surprised? I mean, Capitec, the bank, the sort of lower LSM sort of group that they operate in, the money, the people who they lend that money to are on the coalface of this pandemic, quite frankly, in South Africa. I don't know if anyone's too surprised. I mean, Capitec, Salmon, one of those banks, I guess, that's really divided the sort of bulls and the bears. There's always one side always thinks it's a screaming short, and the other side is always there saying that actually it's such a high growth company. So I guess time will tell. But for now, first glance, difficult to get positive about those results.
Yeah, and that was just the update, as you said, that the results will come difficult to get positive. So switching to the US, I mean, some absolutely crazy stuff coming out of the US. Tesla, largest motor company in the world. I mean, you talk around a stock where there's, you know, a wall of bulls on one side and a wall of bears on the other. Tesla is it. Right now, the bulls are winning. Overtaken Toyota, doesn't make a profit, but the largest motor company on planet Earth.
Extraordinary numbers, and it's actually quite fun if you keep track of what that stock is doing in the Twitter feeds, and it's almost like the Kelter Mr. Musk on the one side versus the realists of Wall Street on the other, and it continues to surge. I mean, almost $1,200 a share at the moment. I mean, put things in perspective, 500,000 cars, I think they're going to be lucky to sell this year, worth more than a company like Toyota, which sells 10 million. And yet to make a profit. So once again, it's going to smell a little bit like the dot-com era all over again. But, you know, the stock continues to surge higher. Interestingly enough, there's quite a nice graph doing the rounds, Simon, between the open interest on the shorts versus the share price. About a year ago, the most shorted stock in America, almost 40% of the stock out on borrow. right now, though, we're down to about, I think, as little as 4 or 5%. So it looks like, going back to what you said, I think maybe the bears are starting to throw the towel in now, given by the open interest on the short.
And, of course, as those bears do throw in the towel, they close their shorts. They actually help some of the buying pressure because to close the short, you're a buyer.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But I was going to even add to that and say when the last short closes, it's probably the short.
Yeah. No, that's always the case. You wait for the last one to ring the bell, and then you know that you're definitely in business. Staying with the U.S., Goldman lowered their U.S. GDP forecast from 4.2 for 2020 to 4.6. This doesn't surprise me. What we see, particularly with GDP, is that typically as a year wears on, the trend sort of either gets better if they're bullish or gets worse if they're bearish. 4.6 is a bad number, but quite frankly, we've still got 6 months of the year to go, could end up lower, and this is what we are likely to see.
Yeah, likely to see, and I think even the estimates of the clever guys in Wall Street getting wider and wider. I mean, those the doomsdayers to the people who think things are better, the gap is that much wider. I think it's almost we're in this reactive market at the moment. So I mean, yeah, we're almost reacting to every bit of news flow about COVID. All the analysts trying to scramble. I guess not made any easier by the guys up in C-suite. I mean, majority of Wall Street firms have cancelled guidance, I think close on 90%. So very, very difficult to get an idea of what's happening on the future growth of America, the GDP, let alone the companies when they can't even tell you what's happening. So it's almost getting more and more like a guessing game out there. It's getting difficult. I think the next 6 months are going to be quite a tough period to get it right.
Yeah, I take that point. I mean, we've seen a great boom off the lows of March, but the infections aren't going away. It's going to get tougher out there. A last question. We saw queues to get into some of the Western Cape casinos on Tuesday, which just boggles my mind. But reports anecdotally across the country, casinos fairly busy over the weekend. Does this open an area of perhaps interest, a Soho Sun, maybe a Sun International? Or is this just another shake the head?
You've got to question how much is in the price already. I mean, you know, we know these markets. You know these markets. You know, they're very much forward-looking. We're trying to discount the future. It's Soho Sun has been one of the punters' favorites recently, along with Sun International. But, you know, it's difficult. I guess I'm a bit more of the shake the head. You know, you've seen, you know, Sun International come on the rights issue. You know, they're all scrambling to raise cash. They're very indebted, these companies. They're not going to go back to any time normal. Look, I'll take the positive for now. You know, it'll be nice to see people and business returning to some sense of normality, but I don't know if I'm in front of the queue of a casino just yet.
Yeah, you talk about in the press, Sun International doubled over the last month. Soho Sun has almost tripled over the last month. There's been a lot of positivity in the share price already. Nakuns Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Anthony Clark. You find him on the Twitters, Small Talk Daily. In chatting education stocks, Stadio, Curo, Advertech. Anthony's been covering them, I was going to say, all since listing. Anthony, Advertech listed in 87. I don't know if you were covering it back then, but certainly you've attended all the recent AGMs of all three of them. Did you get any clarity on revenue during lockdown for them?
Yeah, hi, Simon. As you can say, I've been covering Advertech for 20 years and Stadio and Curo since they were actually founded. I think the key thing from all the three AGMs that I've received is the startling difference between Advertech, Curo, and especially Stadio. And I think when it comes to revenue, what is clearly seen in the COVID-19 lockdown is that the tertiary businesses have done far better than the underlying school businesses. You know, as you know, parents have seen their children being kept at home. Mm-hmm. And the underlying schools have still had the costs associated. And these schools have had to adapt very quickly to an online platform where many of the tertiary operations owned by Advertech and Stadio, up to 80% of those learners were always online. So they've been a lot less affected than the actual school companies.
Okay, that's actually quite a staggering number. I mean, I knew Stadio, they've got the Milpark business. It's just down the road from me, which they purchased a couple of years ago. That obviously is exclusively online. But to your point, that the schools are struggling. They didn't have. I know Curo has launched an online service, but it's new, and it's going to hurt them during the pandemic. Kids aren't going. Kids aren't learning. Parents are saying, what do we pay for?
Exactly. Under the AGM, in Curo's case, between June, July, August, between 50 to 100% of all learners will be back by the end of August. And in the AGM, they actually made the startling announcement. They've put aside a 15 million rand fund to assist parents who are struggling with fees. And in totality, the total cost of COVID-19, if you add in PPE, is over 100 million rand, which is money they probably will never see again. You know, at the end of the day, as you say, parents have been at children have been at home. They have been learning online, and there has been a cost to that. In many cases, certain parents tried to get fees reduced, even went as far as cases, which they lost. Interestingly, in Curo's case, they've launched an exclusive online-only offering to parents who do not want to send their children back to schooling for whatever reasons, be it you know, safety protocols, etc., etc. And that's pulled in over 500 learners in the first few weeks of launching, most of them non-Curo learners. They're from outside, which is also very interesting.
Okay, so that's actually new learners. I mean, suppose Kiro giving 50 million, you know, of assistance to parents, you know, that's securing the kid, because often a kid will come into a school and it's not just your 2020 fees. That child's going to be there for 5, 8, 10, 12 years. You want to have them in your system for the following years once we are past the pandemic.
Exactly. You know, I love statistics, and let me give you some in Kiro's case. They have about 62,000 learners, of which a bulk are actually in grade 1 to grade 12. But they also have about 11,000 learners in what we call preschool, you know, creches and kindergartens. Mm-hmm. That's been very, very badly hit. Now, interestingly, you know, when you send your toddler to creche, to finger paint, you know, it's a very expensive little endeavor. And in the last AGM, they mentioned they've lost about over 2,000 learners of the 11,000 in the preschool, which is why it's being restructured. So in the underlying grades of 1 to 12, they only lost 0.1%, showing you how resilient the underlying primary and high school situation is. They've been badly hit in kindergartens, where perhaps parents are finding the cost of sending their toddlers to finger painting a little bit aggressive in these tough times.
Yeah, those are expensive pictures to put on your fridge when little one brings it home. Kiro announced a $1.5 billion rights issue. That was a surprise to the market. Your sense around Stadio, Advertech, are they going to be okay for cash? Might they come to the market?
In both cases, for Advertech and Stadio, they've both communicated they're paring back on some capital expansion. In Advertech's case, I think from memory, they've pulled back between 800 and a billion rand of planned capex to try and protect their balance sheets during these very difficult times. In Stadio's case, they have a slightly different scenario. They have curtailed the expansion and the construction of their large Centurion Johannesburg campus. Mm-hmm. And the one in Durbanville has been also extended. So basically, they had plans to open Johannesburg in a year's time. That's now been pushed out by a further year, so to try and save some money. So all in all, I don't think Advertech needs any money. And in Stadio's case, they have 165 million rand of net cash and 300 million rand of borrowing facilities. So I went on record when I put my notes out directly after the AGMs that I did not believe that Stadio needed any money. And that was one of the reasons why their share price has had a hell of a run the last couple of days, literally jumping from about 1.45 to a high of 2.10 in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I was looking at that stock. It's had a spectacular run, and as you say, literally in the sort of, you know, yeah, yesterday and a bit back today, but still well up on the last couple of days. So you've had good, you know, the three stocks. You've been to the AGMs. Kiro, Stadio, Advertech, is there a standout preferred stock for you of those three?
Of the AGMs, what I've listened to in the last 2 weeks, as I wrote in a client note a couple of days ago, the standout was absolutely Stadio. Mm-hmm. You would have bought that stock literally about a month ago at about a rand. I put my first note out at about a rand and 12 cents. The stock is up 68% in the last 30 days. Why is that? Simple. Their tertiary operations are asset light. They actually don't need physical buildings. A lot of it is done online. Mm-hmm. So when you have an online platform, you can actually significantly utilize your existing space by actually putting in more learners online compared to putting down bricks and mortar, which is what Advertech and Kuro have been doing. So I personally believe that going forward, the tertiary side of education should do quite well for one simple reason. Yes, you have to send your children to primary school and high school, but perhaps you don't have to send them to private school. Perhaps, you know, things are really tight. You'll send them to a good Model C school or a government school.
Yeah.
If you're trying to augment your career or try and get on the career ladder, you are not going to skimp on getting a great tertiary education to hopefully help you get a good job or to advance your career. So I think that tertiary businesses in a tough economic environment should do a lot better than standalone schools.
That's an excellent point. And the online also means that you're not limited to Joburg and Durbanville. You're limited to planet Earth. We'll leave that there. Anthony Clark, Small Talk Daily, really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Prabhavashini Mudli. She's Managing Director, Old Mutual Corporate. We had the Finance Minister in his supplementary budget of last week talking about Regulation 28, talking about allowing infrastructure assets into Regulation 28. Prabhavashini, appreciate your time. You've come out and said, actually, hang on a sec, this actually isn't a bad idea to give retirees who are investing in Reg 28 products the opportunity to invest into infrastructure projects.
Yes, we believe it's a positive move. And in fact, interestingly, retirement funds can already invest in infrastructure projects. But if, you know, changes and increases to the limit and increases to the number of allowable instruments, if that encourages more investment, then we do believe that that will be good for the economy and provide an additional quality asset for long-term growth prospects for retirees and those saving for retirement.
And those saving for retirement. At this point in time, is that access into infrastructure, would that be via bonds or is there a direct route as well for Reg 28?
So currently in Reg 28, there is an allowance for alternative type assets, and that allows for unlisted equity and into so-called impact funds, which can be structured under life licenses. So currently, there is quite a lot of access into infrastructure type projects through those allowances for alternative assets.
In essence, perhaps also the alternative is fairly broad and a lot fits in there. Perhaps its own standalone would work well. It's also, I mean, potentially it's a good asset to invest in. It's great for diversification within a Reg 28 fund. And as an asset class, it offers a really good potential returns.
Simon, I agree. The current alternative investments category is very broad, lumps in private equity, infrastructure, hedge funds, all sorts of things. And in fact, is currently under allocated in terms of retirement funds. So we allocate just over 8% within the alternative investment class to infrastructure, the kind of impact investments, but a number of retirement funds are actually even allocating less than that. So it is possible that a standalone class for infrastructure will increase the focus and the investigation and consideration by asset managers.
And I imagine, I mean, one of the other benefits of it is a lack of correlation between your traditional majority of where the assets are, which are going to be in equity, mostly that local. Some will also be offshore. And then, of course, property, which holds the balance. And this gives a nice sort of different correlation compared to those two for when markets do get wobbly.
Absolutely. So infrastructure assets tend to be longer term and don't move. They aren't as volatile as equities, say, and they do deliver inflation beating returns over the long time, if properly structured and properly managed, of course. So it does give savers and members in retirement funds a nice diversification. And especially in the South African equity market, where we're not a massive listed equity market, if one compares to the more developed economies in the world. So having more options to diversify the portfolio and asset classes is very positive.
Do we see out? I was digging, Mia Kruger put me onto it, some renewable energy infrastructure, which is US assets. We don't have anything really listed in the South African space. And one of the key points with that was the payoff profile, which is in essence, and these were energy, of course, rather than perhaps bridges and dams as well. But the payoff profile was pretty much guaranteed and then linked to inflation over time. Do we see similar locally, or is the payoff profile much more linked to whatever the revenue happens to be generated?
I think there's still, you know, it's still a small, it's not as developed a market locally as it might be somewhere as large as the US. But certainly if the deals are well structured and appropriately priced, one should see a similar profile. So it's also about having sufficient projects available so there isn't an artificial mismatch between the supply and demand for projects. But one should see real returns, especially if there's well-constructed agreements in terms of takeoff or offtake from these projects.
And then there's a final benefit as a country. I mean, we're seeing countries around the world during the pandemic talking about infrastructure as a route out. Minister Mboweni mentioned it. It creates employment, always a good thing, particularly in our economy. But there's a longer term issue that, you know, infrastructure is broadly just good for economies. You know, bridges and dams and all of these bits of infrastructure help an economy in the medium to long term. And that's really something that we as a country could use.
I don't think it could be overemphasized how badly we need a catalyst right now that can stimulate our economy. I mean, unemployment is at record high levels. Youth unemployment is, is north of 50%. And I think the COVID crisis has also exposed how underinvested some parts of South Africa are and the extent of the infrastructure backlog. So absolutely, Simon, you know, it improves the accessibility for people by creation of quality road networks and bridges and so on. But also in terms of investing in things like hospitals and education infrastructure, it improves the quality of life and the future opportunities, you know, for the current generation.
Of course, I hadn't even thought of hospitals or, and schools, but they're again, universities, they're also going to be infrastructure. We'll leave that there, Prabhashini. Mudli, Managing Director, Old Mutual Corporate, really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
That's it for today. You'll find the podcast every morning from 7 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or wherever you get your good podcasts. Chat to us on social media using the hashtag MoneyWebNow. And a massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests, for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWebNow. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWebNow podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWebNow. On the money.